Welcome to episode 10 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley, and on today's episode, I am joined by Bruce Nelson, my friend, an author, a historian, journalist, a car guy, and ultimately the all-knowing source of cool stuff. Welcome, Bruce.
Thanks, Brent.
So Bruce and I discuss a lot of topics. We're co-historians of Reading, Connecticut. We have social media accounts on local history that captures audiences much larger than even we imagined possible. And we're also co-authors of one book, being pressured for more. But we've all spent far more time discussing history than our wives feel is necessary. But as has been noted since episode one, how do you know the truth of a topic if you don't discuss it thoroughly? So today's topic explores winter. Winter travel, winter maintenance, past and present. A topic that surfaced just recently because on our way to school, my son Liam saw state and town trucks spreading salt and salt brine on roads that had no snow nor ice. He's 16 and learning to drive. Fortunately, I've had a lot of experience with snow, ice, and winter maintenance in the past 10 years, and so I explained to him that this was a technique now of pre-treating, so ice doesn't form and snow doesn't stick when it eventually falls. But this is a new trend, and Bruce, obviously this is a topic we've talked about, and you know a lot about the historic end of winter travel and maintenance. And so what was winter travel like in the 50s?
Well, in the 1950s, you get two things that were vastly different than we have today. Number one was the town and the state's ability to remove snow and keep the roads clear. Back in the day, they plowed the roads, but they didn't use chemicals on the roads at all. They put some sand on the roads. They usually used it fairly sparingly. They put it mostly at intersections and on hills. But once the snow stopped falling, they really couldn't get the roads as clear as they wanted to, and the roads became packed with snow. And we often had roads that were covered with snow and ice for a matter of days. We're used today of having perfectly black, clear pavement within 4, 5, 6 hours after it stopped snowing because of the chemicals we put on it. Back then, they didn't use salt at all in the early 50s. So the roads became pretty much packed with ice. The other thing was the equipment was much smaller. So you had town trucks that were not too much bigger than some of the landscapers use for plow trucks today. And they probably really couldn't move any more snow than the landscapers can use with their big V plows and 8-foot plows and 110 pickup trucks. So also towns had a lot less equipment. The town of Reading, where you and I grew up, they had about 75 miles of road to clear, of which about 25 to 30% were unimproved roads. So the unimproved roads, many of them didn't even get plowed during the snowstorms. They didn't get plowed until after the snow stopped falling. But the town of Reading only had 4 dump trucks with 4 plows, and amazingly, they had 3 sand spreaders on the back of the plows. So they actually had 1 plow truck that would have to have a sand on the back of it, and there'd be a couple of guys up on the back of it with shovels throwing it out after they plowed the roads.
Literally shoveling
sand and throwing it on the back of the roads as they went up the hills or came to the intersections.
So the cars, like, were the cars like all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive? Like, what was the situation with the cars themselves?
Cars were exclusively rear-wheel drive back in 1950. There was no such thing as a four-wheel drive car. Closest thing came to four-wheel drive car. Jeep did make a little station wagon that was four-wheel drive, and they started making that in 1949. They didn't sell many of them because it was fairly small. It rode terribly, and it was incredibly slow. There were only 2 manufacturers of trucks that were four-wheel drive from the factory. One was Dodge, one was International Harvester. Other than that, there really wasn't, for traction, they were rear-wheel drive. Snow tires didn't become commercially available until 1952, when Goodyear came out with their Suburbanite with a cleated tread on it. But snow tires, not too many people used them, and particularly in the early 1950s.
So how does that work? Like, how? I mean, obviously, you know,
Well,
I don't have great snow tires in my car, and recently, in a little bit of snow, it was kind of treacherous, even though I have all-wheel drive. So how did you guys handle it?
Chains. We had to put tire chains on, and tire chains were difficult to put on. If you're doing it in a dry garage, it's not too bad. But if you have to do it out on the road and the tires are wet and covered with snow, it's a really sloppy process. But you put chains on the rear tires, and it takes probably about 10 minutes with tire to put them on if you know what you're doing. Because then you've got to put spacers on, you've got to put tensioners on, and chains are good when you're driving in the snow. They're terrible on a dry road. They're very noisy. You really can't drive a car more than about 35 or 40 miles an hour on a dry pavement with a chain on. So back in the day, you put the chains on when it snowed. If in the afternoon the roads got better, you took the chains off. The next morning you get up, you put the chains on. It was a pretty miserable process.
Huh. And then, like, what about in just in general? Like, what even, like, so say cars didn't have chains. How did they manage that?
So if you didn't put chains on your cars, you were soon walking. Because you couldn't make it up a hill, you'd slide into a snowbank. Everybody wore chains.
Huh. No, that's the thing. And that's like in talking with my dad as well. He mentioned that back in that time frame, you guys would actually prepare to be stuck. So you would have a shovel, you would have warm clothes, blankets. If you didn't have sand, kitty litter, that's all true?
Lots of times if you got stuck, you took the floor mats out of your car and you put them in front of the wheels and try to drive up on the floor mat and get the thing rolling again. A lot of guys threw out their backs and pushing the car in front of them that got stuck to try to get them up the hill or get them out of the way so they could drive by.
It wasn't fun.
You didn't go out in the snow unless you had to.
And then you had to like learn some special techniques. Like I learned the hard way to turn into the curb, and so you wouldn't do like a 360 into a bank.
Well, everybody learned to drive in snow. If you lived in New England, that was one of the things you learned to do. Most people learned to drive in snow actually before they got their license. If their parents were teaching them how to drive, they took them out in a parking lot and told them to start spinning around and finding out how long it took to stop and how to get going again.
What car did you have back then?
In 1950? I didn't have any car.
Well, I know.
My first car was an Austin Healey, and that was useless in snow.
So what about clearing the roads? What about the plowing situation? I mean, we touched on it, but...
The towns had a difficult time plowing the roads because they didn't have enough equipment. In the town of Reading, where you and I grew up, they actually had an Alice Chambers road grader that they use primarily for smoothing out the dirt roads as soon as the mud dried in the spring. But in the wintertime, if there was a lot of snow, they would put the Alice Chamber road grader into use, and poor guy that rode on that was sitting out in the open, and he had to put on a set of goggles and drive it, and the thing was probably about 35 or 40 feet long, but it did clear the roads.
Yeah, no, I've seen that up here in the northwest corner, too, so... Yeah, that was definitely a thing. And then as far as right now, driveways and things of that nature, plow guys, yes or no?
Well, driveways at the time, you basically needed a strong back, a strong heart, and a shovel. Pretty much nobody had any other way to clean their driveway. The first commercially produced snowblower was built by Toro, and I think that came out in 1952. But it only could take about a foot of powdery snow, and it was about 17-inch wide path. And from the pictures I've seen of it, it doesn't appear to have been self-propelled, so you would have had to walk behind it and push it. So they were about $200, which was probably equivalent today to maybe $2,000, so not a lot of people had those. Landscapers cut the grass in the summer for rich people. Vast majority of people in 1950 cut their own grass. There weren't too many people that plowed. Like I said, there was only two trucks available, the Dodge Power Wagon and International Harvester pickup truck. There were some CJ Jeeps, and CJ stands for Civilian Jeep. That was a modeled after the military Jeep, and they made a few changes in it after the war. And a few guys bought those things. They put metal cabs on them. You could buy a metal cab from J.C. Whitney for about $100, and then you put a plow on it. But the problem with the early plows is they were up-and-down plows. If you needed to angle the plow, if you're going to plow a long driveway and push the snow to the side, you had to get out, take a pin out, and turn the plow to the side, put the pin back in, get back in it. Another problem with those things is there was no heaters and no defrosters. So they weren't really well used for commercial because it was difficult to drive one because you couldn't see out of it because the windows would get all fogged up.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, because that's what, like, most of the time, but that I rode in plows with the guys, it was so hot in the cab, they were wearing T-shirts. And so, yeah, that I didn't...
Well, that wasn't a problem in a 1950 Jeep. It was so cold in the cab, you couldn't feel your fingers.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And we never had a plow guy at our house. We had Brent and Jameson Colley, and...
that was the thing. We made a lot of money as kids. We made most of our spending money as kids shoveling out the neighbors. The problem was is that our parents had to be very careful to make sure that we didn't leave the house with a snow shovel before we shoveled our own walks and our own driveway, because then our parents were screwed while we're out making money.
Yeah, no, totally, it's true. But another thing we talked about, and we've talked about, there weren't as many school delays or cancellations back then.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when I started school, which is about 53, I don't ever remember school being canceled in an anticipation of a snowstorm or being canceled early in the morning. Generally, school was canceled. If it started snowing in the afternoon or early evening, they might cancel school for the next day because if they thought the snow was not going to be able to be cleared away. But other than that, they put chains on the bus, and they picked us up. Back then, too, you didn't stop at every driveway. The buses had assigned stops. Probably most of the time, there'd be 8, 10, 12 kids at a stop. Again, in the town that we grew up in, Reading, there was only 4 school buses that handled the entire elementary school. And each school bus only held 35 or 40 kids, as opposed to, I think they hold maybe 50 or 60 today. And you could walk up to a mile sometimes to get to your school bus. So they got us to school. Wasn't always on time, but we usually got to school. Delays, there was no such thing as a delayed opening unless if there were 4 buses, if 2 of the buses were late, they delayed teaching classes until the other 2 buses got there.
So the kids would just sit in school and wait? That was the delay?
Yep, we'd sit in school and wait until that was the delay. But there was we never had a delay until I was in high school. They started to have these delayed openings, but they didn't have it. First place, there was very little communication back in the 50s. You didn't have local TV stations. You certainly didn't have the ability to broadcast phone calls like they do today. You know, you can have a recorded phone message today and broadcast it to every parent in town within a few seconds. Back then, you had to use a regular telephone. And back in 1950, most of these smaller towns had switchboards. So it took a long time to call everybody.
Yeah, and no internet.
Yeah, definitely no internet.
No, I get it with the bus stops. Like, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and, we always had a bus stop. It was never, driveway to driveway. We always had to go to a central location.
You stood out in the snow. You stood out in the rain. Yeah. Nobody ever caught pneumonia.
There.
Nobody ever died from the cold. That's another thing. I mean, today they cancel school even if it's really cold. I can remember standing out at the bus stop. Everybody had a woolen hat, woolen mittens, a heavy jacket on, and we all wore boots over our shoes. And if you didn't, you got cold and you got sick and you were miserable. So
you're right.
You only did that once or twice.
In your shoes. Remember, that was like one of the ways that we kept our feet warm. Put the Wonder Bread, over your sock, and that would keep your boots, keeping heat within them. I mean, when I went to my grandparents with my brother, we had to literally walk at least a mile down to the bus stop. And there were times when, we could hear the stop just above the way, probably a quarter mile, to our left stop, and we'd just look at each other and run, because the bus drivers wouldn't wait. If you weren't there, they kept on going, and then you didn't go to school because most families only had one car. So if grandma and grandpa were at work, you know, you're not going to hoof it to, you know, school 10 miles away.
And the bus driver was king back then. If he said that he was going to not wait for anybody, he didn't wait for anybody, and he didn't get fired the next day. Also, when we would leave school when it was snowing, sometimes it'd be pretty bad on the way home, and we had a bus driver. They would get us so far, and when the roads got to be hilly towards the end of the run, there was about a mile and a half left on the run, he would stop the bus, open the door, and said, "This is it, guys. You're done. You're on your own." And we'd get off, and we'd walk the rest of the way home. I can't imagine that happening today.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's crazy. So what do you think changed? What do you think over the course of time really changed that whole system?
Well, I think communication is one thing, but I think the biggest thing was the ability to forecast weather better. It's amazing. Before we had this discussion, I looked up and, first I thought we got a lot more snow back then, and it turns out we didn't. If you look over the last 75 years, it works out. It's pretty much the same amount of snow. It definitely was colder back then. So when it snowed, it started snowing earlier in the year. It started snowing generally in the middle of November, and it lasted until about the 1st of April. And when it did snow, because it was colder, it didn't melt as quickly. So the roads, again, stayed in lousy conditions, so the roads weren't as easy to traverse as they were today. And if you waited and canceled school like they do today, if there's a little bit of ice and snow on the road, we would have never gone to school. So, they adapted to that. But forecasting was a really big difference. There was no such thing as radar. They started using radar for weather. They found out that they could forecast weather from radar in World War II, but it didn't become really using, I think the first TV radar I read was 1961. So they didn't really know what the weather was going to be. When they first started using computers and doing numerical forecasting, they had a 36-hour window. The rate of accurate forecasting was only about 21%. And today, I think it's in the mid-80s. So they're much better to be able to predict what's going to happen in the future, so they can make plans, they can cancel school, they can have delayed openings, and we can broadcast things. And with the internet and cell phones and communication today, everybody on the same page. I mean, can imagine trying to get in touch with a bus driver back in 1950 when he was on a party line, and you couldn't even get through to him. To tell him that there's not going to be school.
That was true up until like the 90s and 2000s. There was no communication available like we have it today, where it's like automatic. You'd have to go to a payphone and call somebody and hope they were there if you were on the road. That's just how it worked.
Well, we discussed it before. We talked about, people were tougher back then. Well, they were tougher about a necessity, probably. And when you mentioned to younger people today, we did go to school even when it was snowing, and the bus driver would tell us to, find our own way home after we got it so far, it's hard for them to imagine that. It's not so much that people were callous back then. It's just that, they weren't as well prepared, and they didn't have as much information as they have today.
Well, they're probably prepared, but they just didn't have the tools that we have today. And for the most part, like you said, with the bus driver deciding not to go down a hill or up a hill, it was more or less keeping everybody safe.
Right. And today we have cars that are all-wheel drive. It's very, very seldom you see somebody buy a car in this area that's not all-wheel drive. We have remote starters, so that we don't even have to, my dad had to go out and scrape his windows. It would take him a half an hour to be able, so he could see out of his car if it was snowing and icy and stuff out there. Today we hit the button inside our house and the car is all warmed up and defrosted by the time we get out there. We have heated seats, heated steering wheels. We've got, anti-collision devices on our cars that keep us from skidding and anti-lock brakes. And we didn't have any of that stuff in 1950.
I remember running out hot, pans of water to get the ice off my dad's windshield so he could get to work on time faster.
So like you didn't crack it.
Yeah. Then that never happened. Thank the Lord. But that was one of the ways that we helped out Dad and to get to work. And yeah, I think he had an Oldsmobile Cutlass, and I can't imagine driving that. No. But I think, some of the things that I've seen just in recent time, to tie back to what, my son was asking me about, is the usage of now salt and salt brine. That's really changed a lot of different things that we see in the present day. Like you said, it used to be packed snow, and now it's bare road. And that's what everyone feels is, the way it should be. So in looking at the town budgets, because I had annual reports dating back to, the 90s, really it seemed from what I could tell with the annual reports was that sand was replaced with salt around 2004, 2005. And we're talking about budgets that were, in terms of sand and salt, were really low, like $20,000 a year. And then the salt increase when you get to, say, like 2010, was like $100,000 a year. And then the interesting thing about those line items is that in the present day, you can go over them by a lot, and you just go to the town at a town meeting and, hold your hat in your hand and say, I'm sorry, but we used $120,000 more in salt than we thought we were going to need. I mean, the largest one I can recall was around $220,000 in 1 year for salt.
That's funny. You mentioned the budgets. I was reading a Reading Town budget from 1950, and they had a grand total of $4,083 was what they spent for snow removal, and that included buying a new snowplow for one of the trucks.
That's back in the day.
That's back in the day. I mean, and before 1948 was the first time that they started to actually have a line item for snow removal in Reading. Before that, it was just in the town Department of Transportation budget. And the Department of Transportation budget was only in the $20,000 range for everything, and that included tarring the roads, which is the only – they didn't pave roads back then. They tarred them. And they just put heavy petroleum oil on them and mixed sand with it and drove over it. And that made a semi-hard road surface, but it didn't make for a really smooth road surface, which is another thing. When they plowed the roads back then, the roads were much rougher. Town roads didn't have drains in them for the most part. So if there was any standing water, it froze. So you had ruts in the roads that stayed full of snow because the plow can't go down into each one of those little ruts and potholes and stuff. So the roads were not, under the best case scenarios, the roads were not anywhere near as clean as they are today.
No, and that's probably the biggest change for that. So, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today. And
my pleasure,
Brent.
This.
We have some great conversations, and I'm glad we get this one on the air for the listeners. I'm sure many people out there recall the same topic. And as we've noted in other episodes, there is an email account that you can write to, stories@robinhoodradio.com, and just tell us what you want to know more about or if this topic was of interest, and we will circle back and put another episode together for you. So until next time, be well and always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.